Hey, if you could turn to the book of Matthew. Yes, the book of Matthew. Great book, great name. But Matthew chapter 7, Matthew chapter 7, verse 13 through 23. Matthew chapter 7, verse 13 through 23. And as you turn into Matthew chapter 7, verse 13 through 23, you know, there are some scriptures in the Bible that are what we call leisure reading. They're encouraging. They're you know, they can help you out when you're in a spot. They can lift you up. And then there are those scriptures in the Bible that, man, you read them and it just kind of gives you some concern. You know, you get a little concerned about your spiritual life. And those scriptures are some of the ones we're going to be looking at over the next couple weeks. But I'm not sure if you've ever flown on an airplane, right? I don't know if you've done that. But it's a wonderful gift to be able to be somewhere hours quicker than in a car. I mean, this is great, right? But there's two kind of steps to this, right? When you step on the plane, that's, hey, guess where the plane's at? It's on the ground. You know where I like planes to be at? I like them to be on the ground. Now, you know why we like the planes to be on the ground? We like them to be on the ground because when you get up there, guess what happens if something goes wrong? I mean, you don't have no hope. You know, so we're really not worried about the takeoff, but really and truly, we're concerned about the landing. Because in our mind, I don't know how your mind works, right? But in my mind, it's like, hey, there's a couple different ways this can go. I can get on this plane and I can enjoy the clouds, you know, because you don't get to see clouds up close and personal down here. You get up there and you can enjoy that. And then you can go home and get off that plane safe. Right? I mean, that's kind of story I like. But in our world today, what do we have? We have the news. Y'all know what the news does? It alerts you to every possible way that you can die on this earth. All right? Any kind of cancer, any kind of car wreck, any kind of, in part, so what do? Well, they tell you. Here is all the airplanes with people on it that have disappeared. Like some of them, they've gone, they've disappeared. And then they tell you about all these airplanes that, man, they just got to landing and nobody knows what happens and poof, it was destroyed, gone, you know. Or then sometimes you hear these stories and you get the halfway good people where they got on a plane and, you know, it wasn't one of them fatal deals, but they come in and the plane's exploding in the background as they get off the plane there, you know. But the truth is, right, that if you get on the plane and you take off, you are going to have to land. And preferably, you would want it to be a good landing, you know, like an enjoyable landing. And the same thing is true about our life, you know, we take off, we're born, you know, maybe we're graduating this Sunday, we graduate from high school, you know, we work somewhere for 50 years, whatever. But we take off in life, and the truth is that every one of us, right, just like an airplane, we're going to have a landing. Like, we're going to land, and we're going to land on the shores of eternity. And the thing is, that moment can either be a celebration of great victory, or it can be a celebration, or it can be a regret of a great tragedy of what could have been. Because just like there's different situations with takeoff and landing an airplane, I mean, the same thing is true for us. I mean, we might have taken off, and you know, we might have accepted Christ is our Savior and Lord. But then we arrive on the landing pad of eternity, and God has some questions, you know, because he says, look, you know, you took off good, you got saved, but it's like you froze right there. I mean, you froze. You just come, you listen to Brother Matthew for, you know, 230 years, whatever, and you just didn't really do anything. Or he might say, well, I gave you all this money, right? And what'd you do with it? You bought a vacation home in Hawaii. You know, you didn't help the people that need to know the Lord. Or even on the opposite side of that, what could it be? It could be like, hey, man, you know, you got off the ground good. You got saved. But then somehow your old ways kind of pulled you back in. Or then there's this other way where, like, we have take off, we get saved, and we are faithful for the duration of our lives, and we enter into eternity with rewards, with joy. We get to be happy to see Jesus, you know, because we know we lived a life worth it. But then also, what do we know the flip side, right? There's the saved, the celebration, there's the what could have been great in our lives. Like, praise God, we're in heaven, but we didn't spend our lives the way we could have. But then there's the other way, right? And what's the other way? The other way is that we kind of crash and burn on the shore of eternity because we never accepted Christ as our Savior and Lord. You know, maybe we went to church. Maybe we went to Sunday school. Maybe we knew a lot about the Bible. But we never surrendered to Christ. And as long as we never surrendered to Christ, we will always be in condemnation. So the Lord Jesus in chapter 7, He does something for us. I don't know if you've ever seen this, but when they have one of them crash and burn incidents, you know what they always do? What do? They go collect the little black box. And you know what that little black box does? It tells them what went wrong. And you know what all that can do for them is tell them what went wrong. It can't fix anything. I mean, they can know about it, but they can't fix it. And so for us, right, as people, when we get to the landing, you know, the shores of eternity, that's all we're going to be able to do is to look back and see how we went wrong, but we won't be able to fix it. So Jesus, in Matthew chapter 7, verse 13 through 23, here's what He does. He gives us an option to examine our life today when we can do something about it instead of examining it in eternity when we can't change anything. So if you would stand with me as we read the first few verses here. It says, enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction. And there are many who go in by it. Because narrow is the gate, and difficult is the way which leads to life, and there are few who find it. Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves. You will know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Even so, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a bad tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Therefore, by their fruits you will know them. You may be seated. So as Jesus opens up his this section of what we know as the Sermon of the Mount, what He has done is like He's given them information on this is what eternity is going to be like. This is how you are to live down here. And so He kind of is getting to where He's going to wrap it up. And He says, look, right now you have the information, but this information requires you to act upon that, that information. So He starts out by describing the narrow and the broad gate, right? And we've all heard of the narrow gate and the broad gate. And in our mind, right, we have this kind of idea of the narrow gate, which is we feel like, well, look, you have to live this perfect, righteous life. Because the broad gate is what? That's when you do what you want to do and you enjoy your sin and then you go to hell. But we know that Jesus is the one who saves us, right? So where does the grace of God fit in the condemnation of our souls in the narrow gate and the wide gate? And the thing is that shepherds, when they would keep their flock out in the countryside, what they would do, they would make like a little makeshift pen. Like they'd take some rocks and some tree limbs and all this kind of stuff, and they make a little circle. They make a little circle that would fit the whole flock in the pen. And so then they would get them a gate, all right? And Guess what was the gate? It was the shepherd. The shepherd would stand in the gap for the sheep to protect the sheep from the wolves and the predators on the outside. And we know from Jesus' own words in the Gospels, he talks about this. He says, I am the gate, and I'm not only the gate, I'm the good shepherd. And not only is he the gate and the good shepherd, but also what is Jesus, right? Jesus said, I'm the way, the truth, and the life, right? So here we have a narrow gate, and why is it so narrow, right? It's narrow because it's only Jesus wide, but then we have this little word in here, verse 14, right? Because narrow is the gate and difficult is the way which leads to life. And I think sometimes we have a misconception about that word, difficult. Because a lot of times when we think about this word difficult, what are we thinking about? Well, we're thinking about, man, it's just hard not to sin, you know? Because sin feels good and is pleasurable. That's kind of where our minds go. And the people on the broad road, they're sinners. They're wicked, horrible people. The people on the narrow road, man, they're good. You know, they're great people. But the truth is that on both roads are sinners, but only one road is where redeemed people lie. And that's the narrow way. So we get to this word that says difficult is the way. Why? What is Jesus talking about here? Jesus is talking about is that, see, it's difficult because we as people have pride issues. And one of the biggest ways that the enemy draws us in and robs us of heaven and eternity is not by, making us go down this moral collapse of just on the trail, but it's by thinking that we're good. Like, hey, we're good enough. You know, like, have you ever been sitting in a sermon and you're listening to the preacher and you're like, man, such and such really needs to hear that. You know, you ever been there? We all have. Y'all look just like stoic right now, but I know we've all done that. And so when we talk about the word, the narrow gate, it's narrow because why? Only Jesus is the way that we get through there. And it's difficult because why? Because we as people do not want to confess that we are broken, that we are sinners. And the thing about it is that it talks about the broad way leads to destruction, right? And we think about them as the broad way has been easy. But the truth is, when we see the word difficult, it's true. Because not only once you get through, you know, what do you have to do? You surrender your life to Christ. You live for Christ. But here is what we generally miss. We miss that a life of sin is difficult. And why is it difficult? Because when we indulge and surrender to our sinful selves, what happens? We have to deal with the consequences, right? And nobody has ever liked paying the consequences for their sin. It's hard. It's difficult. But then on the narrow road, what happens? It's also very difficult. But it's a very different thing. Why? Because once we surrender our life to Christ and we go through, and you notice here, what's it say? In verse 13, enter by the narrow gate. Enter by the narrow gate. So that's a verb, right? Like that means that it requires a response on our part. And that response is very narrow, it's very exclusive, and it requires us to actually go through. And so what does that tell us, right? It tells us that some of us, the enemy gains our life, our soul, our heart, our family, right? By this, he doesn't tell us, don't go the narrow way. You know, he doesn't say, whoa, don't go through the narrow gate. Don't go through that way. But he says, man, let's just sit here a minute. You know, like, let's just talk about this narrow gate, how beautiful it is. Right? Like how wonderful it is. Like, let's talk about how good a life of righteousness is. And what he does, which is he gets us to focus on the gate so much that we don't even go through it. We don't want to pass through. We don't ever get on the narrow road. And you notice that it says there's also the broad gate, right? Broad gate. And so here's the thing about the enemy. What he does, he's so kind. Because you know why? it is a really bad marketing campaign to say, look, why don't you indulge in your favorite sin and go to hell? I mean, it's hot there. I mean, it's hot. It's scorching. There's no good people there. There's no goodness. There's no righteousness. There's nothing. That's like the worst marketing campaign in the world. And so the enemy doesn't do that. You know what he does? He says, look, I know you got this narrow gate over here, but guess what I'm going to do for you? I am going to build your own gate. All right. So the broad gate, this is what the enemy does. All of our gates look completely different. You know, some of us in our life, you know what? We struggle with pride. We struggle with religious tradition. We struggle with worshiping the work of the Lord over a relationship with the Lord. So what does he do? He builds this gate of religion apart from Christ, apart from God, and he gets us to know all this stuff, to know the routines, the traditions, and all this stuff, to make us feel like, hey, we're okay, we're good, and then one day, right, when the landing comes, what happens? We realize that our life is a lie. And for some of us, it's not that. You know, we're on the other side. We're on like the moral side. It may be lies, lust, greed, work, whatever it is. So the enemy, that's what he does. He builds us a door that is built to our specific sinful desires individually in our life to get us to sell out the opportunity that Jesus gives us. And so we look at these two things here, right? And we have to understand that if we examine, like, what is our landing going to be like? We have to first understand how it started. Because the thing is, we have to start right to end right. And so some of us, like, we're looking at this broad way, and we're looking at our life, and we're like, man, I just don't like going to church. You know, I mean, I don't like going to church. I mean, I ain't feeling the music. I ain't feeling the preaching. I don't feel none of it, right? And what we fail to realize is that you have to start with Jesus to worship Jesus correctly. Like, if you're going to come to church and you're going to worship, right, you have to have somebody to worship, which is Jesus. And so we have to examine our hearts and say, maybe our life is lacking in joy, is lacking in hope, is lacking in freedom from our prison of sin in our life, because we need to go back. You know, like, we need to go back to where we started and enter through the narrow gate, because right now we act like we're on the narrow way. And it's really hard for us to go back, because why? There's probably like 65 people in here or something like that. That may be preacher math. But there's all these people in here. And the one thing about churches is what? Everybody knows each other. They've been knowing you for like 65 years, you know? So it's hard to admit in front of all these people, in front of everybody in the world, that, you know what, I need to go back, you know? Like, I need to enter through and start with Jesus and not religion, not all this other stuff. And so once we check how it started, make sure it starts with Jesus, right, it gets even better. And we have to understand, how is it going, right? So Jesus talks about beware of false prophets. And then he puts in this word here, right? Who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves. And so it almost seems like Jesus has ADHD. Because why is he going from a gate to heaven, and now we're talking about wolves and fruit? And it don't make no sense. But if you go back to the picture of Jesus as the gate to the pen where the sheep are at, right? Once the sheep get out of the protection of the shepherd out in the wilderness, who lives out in the wilderness, right? That would be the wolves. That would be the wolves. And I don't know if you've ever met a wolf, okay? But wolves have certain characteristics, okay? So sheep, You would be fine if you had a herd of sheep, a flock of sheep come to your house. Y'all would be fine. I would be fine. But now, if you had a pack of wolves in your front yard when you woke up this morning, you would not be okay. Nobody's going to be okay. Why? Because their characteristics of sheep and wolves are completely different. You know what wolves want to do? Man, they want to destroy, they want to eat. And if you've ever watched Discovery Channel, right, what do they like to do? They like to fight each other for the number one spot, okay? Like number one guy in charge. They have fights like that all the time. But sheep, what do sheep do? They want to follow. They want somebody to follow. They don't bite. I mean, they might bite, but I figure you're going to be better off getting bit by a sheep than a wolf. You know? I mean, let's just say that. And so we have these two pictures. And there's a key word here that Jesus used, right? Inwardly, they are ravenous. Ravenous wolves. So in other words, a wolf is not just dangerous because of the teeth, because of the threat, but because of the purpose in their mind, which is to consume, to destroy, to do away with. You know, one preacher talking about this, he said, you know, wolves, they feed on you. They don't feed you. That's the difference here. And you notice, what does Jesus say? Who come to you in sheep's clothing, right? So they're wearing a little sheep jacket that they probably just ate. You know, just put the sheep jacket around them, the fur and that kind of thing. And it may work like far off if you got blind and that kind of deal. But Jesus said they have a hint of goodness, right? Just a little bit. But inside, what do they want to do? They want to use you. They want to destroy you. They want to tear things apart. It's two totally different things. And when you don't enter in the gate, right? You don't enter in. You don't start with Jesus. What happens? Well, you're out here where who lives? The wolves, right? And the thing about it is, you know, the wolves, they look different sometimes. Sometimes it's our own moral sinfulness. Sometimes it's our idols, whatever it may be, ravenous wolves. And so then he says, you'll know them by their fruits, right? So the thing is, Jesus is saying, what would you rather experience? Would you like to go to a vineyard where they have grapes, or would you like to go visit a wolf pack? Which one of those things do you want to do? Right? And he talks about this, and he says, the only way you get good fruit, the only way is how? You have to have a good tree. That's the only way possible. And the only way to be protected from the wolves is what? To go through the narrow gate and start with Jesus. So we look at how it started, but what do we also do? We also look at, how's it going? You know, how's it going? Because we look at this situation here, and it's saying, if you have a good tree, you have what? You have good fruit. And so a lot of times, what do we do here? What do we do? We kind of mess things up because we focus on the harvest. You know, we focus on how many baskets of grapes do we have in our life. But we forget that you can't have a good harvest in your life if you don't have a good heart. It's impossible. And so a lot of us, we try to work it backwards. We look at the horrible harvest that we have in our life, whether it's in our marriage, our relationships, our finances, or even, you know, if we look at our church and we're like, man, I wish if my church was like it used to be. And you know what the funny thing about that is, that it's not that the world has changed. That's the reason the church isn't like it used to be. But why is it? It's because our hearts are not like they used to be. We're the ones who have fallen away from where we started with Jesus Christ here. And so one of the ways that we can know this, right, is you look at the wolf and you look at the sheep. So how do you know which one you are, right? Well, here's kind of how we know. We know by what is the wolf's purpose. It is to get something out of it, right? It's to say, how can I feed on the relationships in my life? How can I get something out of the community of believers? How can, you know, it's what can I get? And you notice the wolf, what's he do? He puts on the sheep clothing. Why? Because he has a purpose. He wants to use it, you know, and misuse this. And so you look at the sheep, what are they doing? They're trusting the shepherd. And so we look at this and we have to ask ourselves a question, you know, and be honest with how's it going And if it's not going good, if we don't have a harvest, right, what does that tell us? It tells us something that we really don't like to hear, because what do we like to do? We're like, man, it's the people on the news, you know, the White House and the people overseas and all this kind of stuff. But I love what this commentator says on American Family Radio. And he starts out his program, everyone. He says, you know what? What happens in your house is more important and has more of an effect on the people in your life than what happens in the White House. And so the bad news, right, is what? It's really hard to work on our own heart. I mean, I could tell everybody else how to work on their heart. That's easy, right? But when it comes to our own hearts, that's the one that we have to unpack and to change and to do this examination of how's it going. And then we begin to see true life changes. So you notice every tree. So how do we even get that? You know, because there may be some wolves out there today. You know, you don't have to raise your hand. But, I mean, how do you go from being a wolf who is self-centered that leads to self-destruction to a sheep that follows the good shepherd? Well, basically the way you do that is exactly what he says. You need a good tree. And guess what? None of us is a good tree. It don't matter if your problem is drinking or your idol is church. Both of them, not a good tree. So what you and I have to do is what? We have to go to Jesus where he died on the tree at Calvary for our salvation so that we can be forgiven, so that we have the capacity to do good things and do good fruit. Because some of us, you know what we like to do? Man, we produce good fruit, but our good fruit is kind of like this. It's kind of like when you go to the grocery store, guess what? All that fruit is picked. And then you take that fruit up and you take it home and you put it in the fridge, you lay it on the table, and what happens to it? Man, it just rots away if you don't eat it, you know. And so some of us, we think we're good, but we do all this good stuff, and what is kind of the center of it? Well, I did this. Man, I've done this. It's me, myself, and I. Whereas when you go to the Calvary, to Jesus, and that is the well from which your worship comes, it is this very pure, righteous, and holy fruit that is good until eternity. And so, then he goes on to say in verse 21, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, 'Lord, Lord, have we not promised, prophesied in your name, cast out demons in your name, and done many wonders in your name?' And then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness.'" Now, I don't know about you, but this has caused a lot of people sleepless nights. Because, I mean, think about this. You're landing on a landing strip in heaven, and you're like, Jesus, you know, hey, you remember me? You remember me? You know? And he's like, I don't remember. I never knew you. I don't know who you're talking about. And it's important to notice something here, right? Who is he talking about? He's talking about who? The wolves, the false prophets. And he does this thing, right? He says, man, I prophesied in your name. I cast out demons. I've done all this stuff, right? And what is all that? What is all that classified as? That's work. That's work. That's what I have done for God. And that is different than our relationship with God. And so we see here that Jesus says, look, I mean, I don't know you. Right? And these people, what did they do? The wonders. You know what we like? We like a good wonder, you know? I mean, man, we like a good, you know, hollering preacher. We like a good, you know, good worship band every once in a while. We love, you know, we love a good miracle where somebody, you know, gets healed. We love all that stuff. But a relationship is different than all that stuff. I mean, you think about your wife and your husband. Man, ain't they beautiful? I mean, you look at your wife right now. If you got one, look at her. Look at her. Say, man, ain't she beautiful? Yeah, see? Yeah. Isn't this great? Wives, look at your husband. Say, man, you're so handsome. You know, I mean, yeah, it's great. But you look at your life and your relationship, and you know what? There are those moments of wonder. We're like, man, I tell you, they were perfect. You know, the wedding day, wedding night, you know, when your first kid's born, all this stuff. But your relationship is more than that, right? There's a lot of those faithful, difficult moments in your relationship that even though they're hard and they're difficult and they're not pretty, those are the ones that truly make you get to the point where you can say, like, I know this other person. I've been with them a long time. I love them to death no matter what. And so we see this truth here is that's what Jesus is talking about. That a lot of times we're all about the wonders. And those wonders, what do? Man, we try to comfort ourselves with those. But we forget that the only true source of comfort is what? Being in the presence of Jesus. And as long as we're in the presence of Jesus, guess what you don't have to do? Man, you don't have to wonder and wait till the next wonder or the next excitement and the next thing. You can have that joy and that assurance now. And so then he kind of closes out and he talks about what? He talks about something very important, and he says, this is how it ends, right? So, verse 24, therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will liken him to a wise man who built his house on the rock, and the rain descended, the floods came, the winds blew and beat on that house, and it did not fall, for it was founded on the rock. But everyone who hears these sayings of mine and does not do them, will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain descended, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it fell. And guess what? It says, and great was its fall. So Jesus said, look, you have to start with me, you have to stay with me, and you can end with me. And so he uses this example of, you know, building your house. And so if you was going to go to the desert, right, in Israel, or in the Middle East, the weather, like you think Louisiana weather is kind of crazy. Like, I mean, if you think about somebody with a hard job, it's a weatherman in Louisiana, because there ain't no telling what it's going to be like. But the weather over there, very similar, I guess, to Louisiana. You know, you got the desert, and you got this weather that thunderstorm may come up immediately in the middle without any warning. And guess what? It'll be a flood. Turns the whole desert into a flood. And that's kind of what Jesus was talking about. And what he was saying here is that, you know what? Eternity comes up pretty quickly. You know, like we think maybe when you're a kid or, you know, you're young, you're like, man, you know, it's going to be forever. And then one day you wake up and you're drawing Social Security or something. You know, like it comes quickly. And what Jesus was saying is that you have to start with me. You have to examine how you're doing, right? Keep going with me. And if you're faithful, right? If you stay with me and you go through the narrow gate, then guess what begins to happen? Well, you get to withstand the storm. And this isn't like just like a bad day, right? This is like when you land on the landing strip of heaven, what is your eternity in judgment going to be like? I mean, that's the good news that Jesus is saying here is that you stick with me, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to stick with you. And you'll have the ability to follow through. Now, what's one of the things about storms? If you ever notice about a storm, it doesn't just happen all at once. Like, you know, all the rain doesn't happen. What begins to happen? You notice kind of the wind begins to pick up. You know, get your little raindrops going. But over time, what happens? It becomes more severe. And if you ever notice on your house, you have a list, your wife's probably giving you one, you know, of all that stuff that you need to do, that you need to get in order because your house is falling apart and you as the husband need to take care of it. And when that storm comes, right, that wind and all that, and it gets kind of just keeps increasing in force, right, what's the first thing that it hits? It hits that list that we hadn't done. You know, the shingle is kind of flopping in the air or the side and it's kind of halfway on there or something. Right? And then that's the first thing it gets. But if you get a really bad storm, right? Like a hurricane, a tornado, what begins to happen? Like it'll take out the whole thing. And that's what Jesus is talking about here is like, we have hints in our life that point to the fact we're not on the right track. You know, that there are issues and that it is better for us to listen now than to regret later. You know, there was a psychiatric hospital, and they had a protocol for how they knew people got better. I don't even know how you figure out people get better. But, you know, they had a protocol, and this was their protocol. If they had somebody that they thought was making progress, was getting better, you know, doing good, and ready to get out, here's what they would do. They would take them to the janitor's closet, and had a big old sink there, and they would turn on the water. You know, they'd turn the water on, and then they'd go get that person, and they'd say, hey, the water's overflowing. I need you to mop up the water. That's what I need you to do. And if they turned off the faucet before they started mopping, they were checked off as they good. But if they kept mopping while the faucet was still running, they didn't get out. You know, that'd go back again, right? And so that's a good example of what Jesus is talking about here, is that, you know, a lot of us, we try to mop up the messes in our life, but we don't allow we don't surrender our lives to Christ, which turns off the fountain of sin that the enemy gives us that comes our way. And so we have to understand that if we want to land well, right? Like if we want a good eternity, then we have to pay attention to the warning signs in our life today. And if you think it's embarrassing, like to do better now, you know, like say, tell everybody, like, I'm really not doing as good as I thought it was. Imagine when you get to eternity and all of them are going to heaven, you know, and you got to go the other way. Or even worse, you get stuck in heaven next to the Apostle Paul, who gave up his life for Christ, gave up, you know, died, who had to work, you know, for a living and be a missionary and did all this stuff. And he comes up next to him and he's like, well, tell me about your ministry and what you did with what God gave you, right? I mean, that's a tough thing. But the good news is what? We can do something about that today, and we don't have to deal with the regret later on. And so as we have this invitation, the music plays, we have to ask ourselves, number one, are we the person, like, we didn't start in the right place, and we have to go back. You know, we got to go back to Jesus. Or secondly, maybe we're the person who we're looking at our life like, how's it going? And it's not going good, and we need to surrender our lives to Christ. And then also, maybe we're the person who we've thought about it, and we're like, man, if I landed today, it wouldn't be good, and I have to accept Jesus as my Savior and Lord. Or, you know, we're worried we might get stuck to Apostle Paul, and we have to make the decision to become more committed and surrender our lives to Him so that we can see those rewards in heaven.